We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall. Up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go heavy.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
Were you surprised that 65% of players make $1 million or less per year in Major League Baseball? Is that a more difficult statistic to believe, or is it that 70% of the Cubs' revenue comes from ticket sales, concessions, parking, and other so-called game day money?
65%? Of baseball makes $1 million or less. You see these contracts coming down, you see how much the top players make, and you just kind of have this, why would you ever play football when you can play baseball? Because baseball players make so much money, and you can put a career together, and they pay even some of these really crummy players huge money. Then you find out that 65%? That is a huge percentage. Honestly, I think that surprised me more than the 70% of the Cubs' revenue.
Mully and Hall.
I get a kick out of you guys.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Don't know how to reconcile the numbers, but they don't add up. And when you look at what ESPN reported in December, the average major league salary for players on rosters last August 31st was $4 million. $4 million is the average major league salary. And I know that number gets hiked up because of the people at the top of the food chain. And I think what we talked about yesterday is true. There's no middle class anymore in Major League Baseball. So if you have the average major league salary at $4 million and 65% of the players making $1 million or less, I really need an algebra professor to kind of talk about, you know, X over Y plus this. And how is that possible? And it does seem to be contradictory.
Mully and Hall.
That's a hell of a team.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Fascinating, really, to talk about some of the baseball stuff and the argument that is ongoing between the owners and the Players Association. And look, we figured it was going to get kind of ugly, and it's gotten kind of ugly when Max Scherzer is tweeting out late at night that there's no further reason to engage with MLB about salary reductions for the 2020 season. That's going to draw the ire of a lot of people.
It will, and I understand it. That's what the position that a lot of players want him to take, and he is a guy, as we talked about in the last segment, he's known for his competitive fire. He's known for somebody who cares about the game and the future of the sport. So I guess that negates the fact that he also is very financially secure and has already made $109 million as a Major League Baseball player. So he will have less of a sense of urgency than the guy trying to make the roster, you know, for $650,000. I just for once would like to hear somebody explain this on either side. It can come from either side, how much urgency exists and how these aren't typical negotiations and how this is a critical summer for not only the present day season, but the future of baseball because of what we've gone through as a country, because of how 36 million unemployed Americans might be viewing this public discourse over millions differently than they might in your typical summer. I just would like to have somebody appeal to the masses and explain to everyone why this is different and these aren't your typical negotiations, even though I respect both sides, where they're coming from, and understand the financial arguments, but nobody wants to see this play out any more publicly than it already has.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to stomach. And you know, even just talking it through, it's uncomfortable. It's not a pleasant subject, right? I mean, I really enjoy talking about how sports are going to come back and what they should do. And we know the NBA has a GM meeting today. And by meeting, I mean conference call. And then they'll presumably be Zooming with owners tomorrow. And then we'll wonder, you know, which owner is not going to realize that he's on the microphone when someone else is muted and make a good joke that turns into some potential controversy. So that all happens on Friday. The Board of Governors, rather. But at any rate, David, it's much more pleasant to talk about sports coming back than to wonder if money can keep it from coming back.
And we talk about who feels the most pressure. I do wonder, it might be a simplistic way to look at it, but when you have the NHL announce a return to play plan 2 days ago, with Gary Bettman, of all people, being the first commissioner to kind of outline those plans for the NHL. When you have Adam Silver, as you said, kind of talking tomorrow, and kind of you get the sense that the NBA is coming back. It's just a matter of working out the final logistical hurdles and figuring out how big the field will be. They're coming back. We talk about college football, and you see all these schools now reconfiguring their academic calendars, and it's with the idea in the back of everyone's mind. So, that means there's going to be some semblance of college football next season. The NFL, we know where that stands. What if Major League Baseball is the only sport that doesn't return because of the things that we are talking about right now? Because they didn't see a need to renegotiate. They were so insulted by an offer, and the owners wouldn't open their books, and they wouldn't come back from this negotiating point. What if that is the reality, and how much pressure does that possibility place on both sides to get something done?
Yeah, it's a great question, and one that we've been kind of talking about to a certain extent. There's a couple things we haven't mentioned yet. Can I just go over quickly this idea, the couple of ideas with you?
Sure.
Your guy, I should say my guy, I'll call him our guy, Phil Mickelson, said yesterday that the match needs to be an annual event, and we had talked about our potential foursomes. He rattled off some names: Steph Curry, Michael Jordan, Tony Romo, Patrick Mahomes, people that we had mentioned. He also said Bill Murray and Larry David as parts of a foursome. And my question to you, David, is do you like the idea of the match as a annual event, or do we already kind of see that kind of stuff with these pro-ams and all that? Is it different because they're mic'd up? Is the takeaway that we want more celebrity golfers, or is the takeaway that we want more mic'd up golfers?
If you're going to be mic'd up, it has to be someone who is worth mic'ing up, and you want to overhear their conversations. I don't want to overhear anybody's conversation that is dull. You know, it's like we talked about the Game 7 home run. David Ross is mic'd up, and he hits a home run, and he rounds the bases and says nothing. You know, I mean, what's the purpose of being mic'd up?
Couldn't you ask him a question? Like, hey, why are you hitting that? You know, what are you hitting there?
Right.
And listen, I'm not like Mr. Fanatic on the rules of golf, but I had a friend who was. I went golfing with these guys, and I've never seen anything like it. Like, I said to the guy, like, what are you hitting from here? And he said, well, it would be a stroke penalty if I were, I think it was, it's a stroke penalty on you for asking me that question. 2 strokes on me if I answer it. And I'm like, are you serious? Is that, those are in the rules of golf. Like, these guys had memorized these obscure rules. And either that or they just found me the most tiresome person to play with because I kept asking questions. But there are all sorts of weird questions and weird, like if you look at a guy's putt, you lose a stroke. If you get behind him and try to see his line. But that's the kind of stuff they were doing, and that's the kind of stuff I want to know. And if you could ask a guy, even someone who didn't, you know, wasn't the most compelling personality, hey, Jordan, why are you hitting that from there, and what are you trying to get done? If he would actually answer you, I think you'd be on to something.
Maybe, but I think Sunday worked as much as a couple of things were in play. One, everybody has been, you know, hungry for live sports of any kind. But I think the bigger the bigger part of it was you had four of the most dynamic personalities in all the sports, and you had them together for 4 hours or with live mics and interaction, and you were able to kind of ride along with them. And so everybody wants to be, you know, part of a group that includes Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady. I mean, goodness sakes, if you could try to duplicate that every year, I like the idea of Tiger, Phil, and two other guys. You know, if Steph Curry and Patrick Mahomes is next year's The Match Part 3, then I'm all in, because I think those are the guys who, you know, you want to hear what they have to say, and they do have the kind of personalities that lend themselves to being fun and being kind of informal and casual and not be quibbling over the rules of golf.
Yeah, that wouldn't be as good. Okay, there's also a story out there. This is super bizarre. We know that Mike Tyson has talked about coming back and has been working out, and supposedly the Bare Knuckle Championship offered him $1 million for a fight. Mike Tyson is 53. He will be 54 in June, like two weeks into June, I think the 13th, something like that. He's about to be 54 years old. Supposedly, Tyson Fury has gotten a phone call asking him. Tyson Fury is 31. He'll be 32 in August. And he got a phone call. Hey, would you be willing to fight Mike Tyson? Tyson Fury is named Tyson after Mike Tyson. His old man was a big boxing fan and loved Mike Tyson, and everybody did in those days. Would you have any interest, David, in seeing a 5'10" Mike Tyson in some sort of bizarre exhibition against a 6'9" Tyson Fury?
I would. Yeah, I would find that very compelling. And I think that you would almost suspend common sense, because it sounds like a real dangerous thing to do for a 54-year-old man. Yes. who already has endured the kind of probably head trauma that Mike Tyson has throughout his life. But
that's just with the tattoos.
Exactly. Yeah, that's just after the hangover. When you look at him working out, he looks like I still wouldn't want to mess with him. I mean, he looks like he's in shape. I wouldn't count him out. It probably sounds silly, but Mike Tyson for, you know, 4 minutes, my goodness, I wouldn't want any part of that.
Yeah, I might be more worried about Tyson Fury's nether region than anything else. If that's where Mike Tyson is punching, and God knows he'd do it. If you can't bite a guy's ear off, do you punch him in the you-know-where? I don't know. I mean, listen, Tyson is a compelling figure. Just because when I think of Tyson, I don't think about, like, older Mike Tyson. I think of Mike Tyson as a 19-year-old in those baggy shorts walking through people and, you know, whatever. Oh, you got to be careful about this guy's jab. Oh, no, wait, he just punched him in the face again. He was terrifying when he was younger, but I don't know. I mean, here's the problem. That whole kind of circus with Floyd Mayweather, that ended up being like a really fun thing to watch. And I didn't realize that it was going to be that much fun to watch. So I guess, you know, part of the other argument of this stuff, David, we're in lockdown, right? So, like, of course the match is going to get this unbelievable rating. And of course we're going to sit here and say we want that every year. But if we're not in lockdown, do you want to sit in front of it? Are you
no.
going to be that compelled?
No, definitely. That's all part of it. You're asking, you know, you're definitely more interested in things right now because you don't have anything else to look at. I mean, so you want to stare at Mike Tyson, because that sounds really interesting, because it sounds like a social experiment. Let's let the Mike Tyson fight a 6'9" guy who was named after him. I mean, that was really is what it's all about. I don't know that if sports resume and we're in the midst of, you know, all four major sports could be in play in August. Is that really what you want to take a step back and watch Mike Tyson fight at 54 years old? That might be a different equation at that point.
Right, right. I think that comes into play. Should we listen to Joe O and the governor? Should we listen to the governor answering a question from
sure.
Joe? I think it's just fun to do. Kevin, can you please supply that for us now?
Kevin. This question is from Joe Ostrowski at 670 Score. Earlier this month, Las Vegas casinos started offering drive-through services so Nevada residents could set up mobile accounts with sports books. Is that under consideration at Illinois casinos? So customers will have mobile ready once they go to the plan.
It is, and we're working on that. And we're also working on the ability for people to do it in person somewhere, to sign up for the app to allow them to bet.
They're working on it. Go on, Joe. Come on.
So Joe submitted a question that was asked
that's
on behalf
it.
Of Joe.
Well,
this question is from Joe Ostrowski at 670 to score.
Awesome. Aren't you proud of him? I'm so proud of Joe. It's great.
Got an answer.
And you know what? I have the same question. I wanted to know that. And the governor's working on it. And I feel like I've gotten more information. Thank you, Joe O. That was wonderful.
It's a big issue.
It is a big issue. All right, we've got other big issues, and we're going to get to them. We also have Matt Nagy doing the rounds again. He was talking to Rich Eisen. We got to hear a little Matt Nagy when we come back from break. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Where Mitch can get better, and he knows this, and that's why I can say it, is we talk about the whole, you know, next play mentality, just being able to continue to, whenever it's a if there's a bad play that happens, have the next play be a good play. If it's a good play that happens, let's have the next play be a better play. And so he's really, there's times in the last this past year where he showed that. And so he's going to keep growing. You know, obviously we brought in Nick, and Nick has been at the top. He's been at the bottom of the valley. And so now you have what we're declaring as a healthy QB competition. And these guys are very, very competitive. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how it ends up going. But I really think that, for going back to your question with Mitch, that he's going to welcome this challenge, and that he knows, too, it's only in fairness that we could have been better in a lot of different areas, including myself, last year as an offense.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. That is the voice of Matt Nagy. He was on with Rich Eisen talking about who else? Mitchell Trubisky, about the quarterbacks.
The great Mitchell Trubisky.
Are you tired of hearing it, David? Are you weary of hearing of Mitchell Trubisky, of the quarterback battle, of what needs doing and when?
No, I don't think so. I think we live in a football city, and the understanding about the Bears, everything revolves around an upgrade at the quarterback position and how they approach that in the offseason. I think the way you look at it, it's difficult for a lot of people to look at Mr. Trubisky objectively and to see somebody who doesn't represent a colossal failure, because he was the number two overall pick in the draft and he hasn't lived up to those expectations. But I really believe that, I hope that he doesn't look at things that way. And I don't know that he probably... nobody wants to look at themselves as a failure. I'm not saying that he does that, but I think he probably, when he looks at what he was unable to do last year, it shook his confidence in his career, in his ability perhaps, and I think that was evident on the field. But in getting Nick Foles for the 2020 season, the Bears not only, I think, you know, improved the position of quarterback, but I think if Mitch Trubisky takes a step back, he could look at it as they enhanced his career as well. He may lose the job, and he may lose the battle, if you want to use that analogy, and win the war. Because at 25, he has started 41 NFL games, I believe, or whatever it is. He's over 40 NFL starts. And he still has a lot of football left to play in his career. What he's never had is an example. And I don't talk to me about Chase Daniel. Chase Daniel was never successful as a starting quarterback in the NFL. If Mitch Trubisky approaches this next season correctly and has an open mind to the ways that Nick Foles, an accomplished leader, an accomplished professional, can help him be a better professional quarterback, this is win-win for everybody. And I think that's the message that I think you start to look at it and you think, I'm not tired of that conversation. But it's got to be a different kind of conversation than just being repetitive about, boy, Mitch hasn't done this and he can't do that. Nick Foles can help everybody in Chicago just by being the kind of leader and professional quarterback that he has been known to be throughout his career.
Yeah, I don't know where we're at with Mitch. I don't know how legitimate his opportunity is. I don't know if he's still
around because it doesn't make sense for him not to be. I know they didn't pick up the option, which is an embarrassment, frankly, when you trade up to draft a guy at number two. And I don't know where Matt Nagy is in terms of, you know, it would appear that he has a quarterback that he feels he can communicate with, a quarterback that is literate in his offense, and that is a very important thing for him. I don't know. I don't know what their plan is with Mitch. I think that you look at Nick Foles coming in, and you would imagine it's hard to envision him not being the starting quarterback. And I don't know why they are not just doing that. I'm not quite certain what. How do you benefit if you hold a quarterback competition, and you come away with it with more confusion than when you started?
Well, I think they're probably trying to salvage whatever is left of Mitch's confidence. Maybe a demotion would harm that. I don't know. I don't think. Again, it goes back to what they say about this. Yes. Is much less important than what they do. Because if we would have held them to what they said, you know, Ryan Pace back on December 31st predicted this reality that we're in the midst of would never happen, and they wouldn't have Nick Foles there to challenge, because this is Mitch's job, and he's a starter, and you know, all these things that weren't necessarily true. So I you just follow the money. If Nick Foles isn't the starting quarterback for the majority of the 2020 season, then I think something either went terribly wrong or something went terribly right and you brought out the best in Mitch Trubisky. Either way, it would be a big surprise.
What is your take on this Cam Newton situation? The idea that he was cut late. Teams can't bring him in, can't take a look at him. He doesn't seem like he's in any hurry to sign one of these one-year deals, prove-it deal, in order to get back on the market after he proves it. He seems to be more in line with the idea of waiting to get the right offer from the right team when they realize they need him.
You've got a proud NFL veteran who wants to be respected more than he is currently, and you've got a guy with some real legitimate health issues that doesn't necessarily want to acknowledge him to the degree that the teams that aren't signing him or might be interested in him are. And I understand why NFL teams would be wary about Cam Newton, because you haven't had as much access to him as you would in a normal offseason. You don't have the same type of degree of scrutiny that you can give his medical records or even just his personality. Maybe that's something that gives you pause. If somebody is going to have a conditional have conditions upon his signing with you, yeah, I would be cautious. These are NFL coaches. They're cautious about everything. They weigh every little detail about somebody's personality. It doesn't make any sense, because Cam Newton has accomplished so much and I still think has some good football left in him. At the same time, I understand the trepidation, because you could sign a guy and you could commit to him as your starter, and then you could find out on the second day of training camp that he has an injury that's going to keep him out for the next 6 weeks. And then where are you? So I think that's what every team is trying to avoid.
Do you buy the idea that he's too good a player to be a backup, that if you bring him in, you have to give him a chance to be the starter, and that changes everything about how teams view him?
If Cam Newton is healthy, he is not a backup. If Cam Newton is healthy, right, he is the kind of quarterback that can lead you to the playoffs. He is the kind of guy that, you know, more than half the league would probably like to have. With a healthy Cam Newton, if you start to rank NFL quarterbacks at his best, and I think that's probably a big ask at this stage of his career, but a healthy Cam Newton is definitely a guy that you can win with and because of.
I mean, again, it's crazy to think that the guy could be too good. I believe it's all the medical. It all comes down to, can you bring him in and look at it and make sure that everything is okay? And even if you do that, if you're prepared, does that still create a problem if he comes in and gets hurt somehow? So I think it's a different situation with him than other players.
It is. I don't know if it's because the fear that he's too good. I almost think the fear is that he would be too disruptive and wouldn't be as accepting to a backup role as other quarterbacks who might. And let's look at, you know, people say, well, look at Nick Foles. And why would that make more sense? If Nick Foles at least has proven one thing in his NFL career, is that he can accept the role of a reliever, and he can come in and be the closer. Cam Newton, that's harder to envision him accepting that kind of role because of everything that comes with Cam Newton starting quarterback, right? He was a bit of a diva in Carolina, and I don't know that he would be that again, but I think that probably gives pause to some NFL coaches who just don't want to deal with that aspect and wonder about the uncertainty of him as a backup.
I just think that people get upset about it, thinking, you know, there are lesser quarterbacks that have signed, that he's a better player than some of these guys. And I think that's exactly the reason he hasn't signed yet, that Cam Newton isn't interested in coming in and carrying a clipboard for the New York Jets. He wants to actually play. He wants to actually have an opportunity to win a job. And somewhere, you know, somewhere inside, I mean, knows he's an MVP, and he wants to be treated with that respect. And by respect, I'm simply talking about an opportunity to start. You know, the idea that if you get to a point and New England is looking at their team, oh, you know what, we ought to sign Cam Newton. Wouldn't that be phenomenal? Wouldn't you love to watch that? Wouldn't it be a fun thing to see a player like that go to a system like New England's and see what would happen?
I think New England should sign Cam Newton. New England should sign Cam Newton because it would be a tremendous experiment. I would like to see Cam Newton respond to the coaching of Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick and try to fit within that structure the way other, you know, veterans have. I also think it would be almost an admission on his part that, you know, he is willing to be, you know, one of 53 guys on that roster and not the starting quarterback and all that comes with being that guy, the superstar persona. That's what I think scares some people, some teams off, whether that's fair or not. The other guys that signed before he did were more willing to embrace those roles than I think he has seemed willing to embrace.
What about the NFL saying goodbye to the pass interference replay review? And you have various people talking about what a train wreck that idea was, that they had this terrible event happen. They tried to respond with a rule, and they ended up creating more problems than they wanted to, and they can't figure out how to get an eye in the sky on this thing.
I understood the response and appreciated it at the time, and I think that it wasn't the response and the rule change that bothered me as much as the execution. And you saw it was a bizarre thing. It wasn't something that everybody seemed to be on board in implementing. And if that's not going to work, if that's the case, and that was the case. So they had to go back to the way things used to be. And I guess it goes down as a failure, but I don't think it was a failure in terms of an idea. It was a failure because of the way that it was executed.
All right. We're going to bring in Rod Graves. Rod, of course, was with the Bears for a number of years, has been a general manager in the NFL, and is now the executive director of the Fritz Pollard Alliance, and we'll talk to him next. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
I agree it's debatable about the value placed on an incentivized plan, but I just generally like the discussion. You know, we've always taken it from the approach of punitive if you don't interview minority candidates or things of that nature. I just like the different approach in terms of spinning it 180 and talking about maybe incentivizing those that develop the talent and those that hire the talent.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. That's Mike Tomlin. He is the Pittsburgh Steelers head coach, and he's talking about the lack of diversity in NFL hires and the idea that they're trying to get something done. And we're delighted to welcome into the program Rod Graves, now the executive director of the Fritz Pollard Alliance. And Rod, of course, spent 37 years in the NFL, 13 of them in Chicago. And I was blessed to deal with Rod when I was a young beat writer. Boy, that was a while ago. And Rod joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Rod. How are you?
Good morning, Rod.
Good morning, Mike and David. Nice to be on with you guys. And let me just say, Mike, I want to certainly commend you for your professionalism and the level of information that you brought to a lot of the sports fans there you continue to do it, and you've done such a great job, and have always treated me with respect, and I really appreciated it. So thank you for having me on, and looking forward to the conversation.
Oh, yeah, we are too, Rod, and God bless you. We really appreciate you jumping on with us. This is a very important subject, and, you know, when we started initially talking about some of the ideas that the NFL was looking at, there was no way to come away with any other feeling than the Rooney Rule, maybe as well-intentioned as it was, had failed. And clearly we're seeing a lack of diversity in the hirings in the NFL, and it doesn't make a ton of sense to a lot of people, and the standards don't seem to be even across the board. How pleased are you with some of the changes, and will they finally make an impact here, Rod?
Well, a couple of things, Mike. Number one, you mentioned the Rooney Rule. And I want our listeners to keep in perspective why the Rooney Rule was developed. You know, years ago, back during the time when you and I were young and just starting out in this business, the attention was largely focused on the fact that African-Americans and people of color, women and other minority groups just weren't given opportunities to interview. And what the Rooney Rule did was it at least gave opportunities for minorities to be represented in the interview process. So that much of it has been appreciated. And I hope that it continues, because at least it shows a commitment with respect to being represented at the table. What the plan did not address was anything that supported decisions or binds the decision maker to make decisions in favor of diversity. And I think that's where the NFL's plan had failed. They did not go far enough to hold the owners and the decision makers responsible. And therefore, there wasn't a lack of commitment or accountability. And as a result, the numbers were not where they needed to be, and certainly not sustainable.
You know, Rod, back in April when we watched the NFL draft, because of the circumstances, we were taken inside the homes of executives and coaches as they drafted, and we saw them with their families, and we saw them in their environments. And I think that we also saw how much diversity was lacking in the National Football League. And I found it interesting after that you spoke to USA Today, and you called it shameful how the lack of representation and the fact that there were two black general managers and four minority head coaches. And you asked the question, do enough owners care about what you just saw and about those realities? Do the changes to the Rooney Rule answer that yes, they do care? Was it a satisfied answer for you? Were you satisfied with that answer? And do you think that there was any relationship between what you said and the pressure maybe you applied to what happened next?
Well, let me just say the First Pilot Alliance has been very involved with the league since going back to January of this year. And we have talked quite a bit with the commissioner, with Art Rooney II, who is the chairman of the Workplace Diversity Committee. And as a matter of fact, George McCaskey, the president of the Bears, serves on that committee and has given a very strong voice to making changes. And some of those changes obviously were reflected in what was passed this past week. But to answer your question, I am pleased to some degree with the first steps. The NFL came out with a plan which really addressed about seven or eight different areas, ranging from hiring to education and bias training, a requirement that all clubs establish a diversity and inclusion plan, which is something they've never done before. It talked about pipeline development, data collection, and being transparent with respect to job opportunities, reporting, and networking. All of that was included in this plan. David and Mike, we've never seen a comprehensive approach by the league in regard to all of these areas to address diversity. And while I applaud the NFL for taking this initiative, I do want to point out once again that none of this is binding on the decision maker. And the way I've viewed it since coming in and taking over with the Fritz Pilot Alliance is that we have done a tremendous job in the NFL of greasing the pathway toward decisions, but we have not once again held those decision makers accountable for the lack of diversity in the NFL, which in my opinion, as much as I love the National Football League, this record is abysmal.
There's no doubt about it. And, you know, Rod, when we began the segment, we played Mike Tomlin's voice coming in. And, of course, you know, Mike comes from Tampa. He was under Tony Dungy there. Tony has an unbelievable record of kind of producing coaches. And I think that when you look at the family tree of a guy like Tony Dungy, certainly we saw Lovie Smith here in Chicago. And Lovie has talked about being involved in a meeting where he was at the same table with Michael McCaskey. And that ended up being one of the things they could talk about when he was interviewing for the job. So, you know, you have a guy like Tony Dungy. He's got coaches he's hiring that are all, you know, very capable men, learning under him, learning his system, which becomes dominant in the National Football League. And then a lot of guys end up getting different jobs out of that. Don't we need the same sort of thing to occur on the offensive side of the ball? And that's one of the reasons that that they've approved this idea of trying to get a minority candidate within the quarterback room and trying to figure out if the league hasn't indeed gone to more of an offensive game, how do you make sure that that you've got people that are good candidates, and how do you make sure that they're working their way up through the ranks like a guy like you did?
Well, Mike, let me just say, again, thank you for that, for pointing that out for our listeners. But, you know, there's two areas that I think the league has certainly got to recognize. I certainly believe, as well as many others who have been in the league for some time, that there exists an already established pipeline out there of coaches who have worked and dedicated their careers to being outstanding coaches on the field. They're very capable of leadership, and they're ready to go now. It's a shame that many of those coaches have not been called, have not received the opportunity, you know, and some who have proven themselves, as an example, Jim Caldwell, who was a previous head coach at Detroit. Leslie Frazier, Eric Bieniemy. I could go down the line of qualified coaches who are ready today to take those leadership roles. But again, we also not only have to focus on addressing that group, but the development of coaches is another area. And, you know, when you talk about even starting at the position of quality control and then the quarterback coach position, all of those type of positions really feed into opportunities for the offensive coordinator. And today, our record of people of color in those areas is very, very low. I mean, we only have, I think, two black coordinators, very few quarterback coaches, I think maybe one or two quarterback coaches. Very few quality control guys. So we've got to do a better job of feeding talent into those areas to ensure that there's continued growth and development for the opportunity for coordinatorship and also for head coach.
Rod, in addition to the positive changes that I think everybody welcomed, the league tabled a proposal that would have used the draft position, improving the draft position as an incentive to hiring more minority coaches and executives. What was your position on that proposal and the fact that it was tabled?
You know, again, we've had the privilege of working with the National Football League to we've gone through a period of ideation. We helped develop proposals, and we submitted ideas for them to consider. I heard in your opening clip, Coach Tomlin mentioned the fact that he felt like those that develop talent should be recognized. That was very much a part of the plan that we offered to the NFL, that very much like the free agency system today, where if you develop players and they become stars and you lose those players, that you have an opportunity for compensatory picks. And we changed, we took that same concept and applied it to the development of executives and coaches, where if you develop talent and you lose that talent, you have an opportunity to receive something in exchange. We just felt like that kind of approach, if you're going to use draft capital, if you're going to use any type of currency related to football, that you address those that develop the talent, not just those that hire, as was mentioned by Coach Tomlin in your opening statement. But again, I think that there's a system of hiring that needs to be fostered that not only incentivizes hiring, but also incentivizes development. And that's where in the plan that was ultimately pulled off the table by the NFL, that plan fell short and only addressed half of the equation.
You mentioned Jim Caldwell earlier, Rod. See, that's one that really kind of stands out because of the success he had with the Lions and the fact that that wasn't deemed good enough. And then you go out and you hire and you fail, and you have a coach in Matt Patricia come in. You know, I get it, Belichick and Quinn is there, and there's a connection and all that. But now you're going on years of putting together wins that this guy managed to do in a year. So I think that's the one that really jumps out. It makes you feel like there's more at play, that a guy that's winning isn't getting a chance to stay in his job.
No question, Mike. You know, this really boils down to, are we going to eventually move to a system of meritocracy? For as long as I can remember, and as long as you and I have been around, the system of hiring has been largely based on the good old boy network. And it's a matter of who you know, or who you know who knows someone else. And so, you know, all we're asking for is opportunities that level the playing field for people of color, for other minorities, so that the game is available and accessible to everyone, not just on the playing field. You know, Mike, as you well aware, over 70% of our players on the field are people of color. I pointed out in this past draft that 29 of the 32 draft choices in the first round were people of color. So we know the impact that people of color are having on the product on the field, but we're not getting those opportunities in executive level positions where strategy and vision and corporate leadership are in play. And to me, that should not be the case, that we are just as capable of anyone else, and the game should be available to all of us at every level.
Rod, great stuff. Always a joy to talk to you. Really appreciate you jumping on with us.
Thanks so much, Rod.
Mike, anytime, and good luck to you guys, and hopefully we'll have a season and see some good football this year and hope opportunities improve across the board.
Take care,
great
Rod.
Stuff, Rod. Stay safe. That is Rod Graves. Amazing. You know, a lot of great information there. Just a class person, too.
One all of class.
The all-timers. No
all
question.
The time. Yep.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.